The Muskie 360 Podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild, Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Bucher Outdoors, the number one name in Big Fish products, and The Muskie Shop.
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast. This is a special supplemented extra edition for this week because we've had so many user questions, but I've got the dude, my dude, Chaz Martin, back on the line to finish some of these questions. What are you doing, man?
Steven, thank you, man. Well, I am just absolutely excited to be here as always, and honestly, counting down the days till open water, man, for our northern Wisconsin lakes. We're getting close.
Oh yeah, I've heard rumors and myths already of some of these lakes starting to open up. So,
right,
man, it's going to be cool stuff. I you guys need a nice easy spring for once, you know.
that would be wonderful, man. I'm looking forward to it. But hey, you know. Getting the YouTube video editing going is helping me get through it, and podcasts, Muskie 360, it's got my got the brain moving and the muskie juice is flowing. I'm thinking muskies, man.
Absolutely. So, well, we're gonna dive right in. I'll go ahead and apologize if I sound like I'm all nasally, because I think
your voice sounds fantastic today.
Maybe
I don't know what you're talking about.
Maybe I need to be nasally all the time. I might have them coronas. But, you know,
so. I thought this is like the most professional you've ever sounded on the podcast. I don't know what you're talking about.
Like, Tom Brokaw. No, I'm stuffed up like a mofo. I'll mark my words right now. If I get the coronavirus, I'm also going to get Lyme's disease.
So, oh, geez.
Got the coronas and the Lyme's. Sorry, that is a cheap, horrible joke about a pandemic. So, all right, here we go. The first question is from Brian.
Brian, I just got that, by the way.
All right, took a minute. Slow on that. It was off the top of my head and it was really stupid. So the first one up is from Brian. He says, I watch all the Muskie videos. Joe, everybody, Chaz, Lee, I watch them all. And it seems like you guys park really far off a structure, like 20-yard casts at minimum. Is this something that is real, or is this for TV? Is the television making it look like you're making bomb casts, making 40 and 50-yard casts from the structure? Is this just my perception from the video? He says, I feel like I need to make long casts because I'm seeing this in the videos, or should I not worry about getting closer to structure? I'm just going to jump in. I'll tell you.
Yeah, that's a cool question.
The first thing that freaked me out, of course, stop calling me mom. So hold on. Well, I'm going to decline my mother during the podcast here. She'll listen. I'm sure she listens.
We'll put a mom's attention here at some point. Yeah.
You don't, man, dude. My mom could be on the podcast. She knows what. She's been going to Canada, or she's not going anymore, but it's gone for like a billion years. We should do that. That'd be really funny.
That would be hilarious.
But like sandwich making techniques before you go out on the boat.
Oh, dude. My mother would be all over the cooking side of this podcast. Oh my God.
We should do it. That would be hilarious.
Yes, it would.
Dude, my mom ragged me. She watched the latest Bucher video that just came out and absolutely ragged me over that net job. I don't know if you saw that pathetic net job. And I got a text from her and she went, that was trash. That's literally what my mom said. The fun part you don't realize is I had pulled a muscle in my back and I'm limping all over the place. But whatever. Back to the podcast.
The fish is in. Okay. All right.
Fish is in. This is why me and you can't get anything done. It's super sidetracked, man.
Back
to
the
question. Refocus here. So Brian's asking, are they making these bomb casts on the show? Is this like television trickery or what's going on? Brian, when I first got on Joe's boat, my expectation, I actually asked Tyler, as an aside, he was fishing with me down here in Tennessee, and I asked him if I could cast as far as you and Joe. That's no joke. I said, it looks like they're bombing it in. I said, am I going to be able to compete with my reel? And I'm not a little dude, and I, from the perception, and what I realized is you guys are far closer than I ever imagined. You know, when you're filming on television, that perception, the boat is way closer to stuff than I'd ever imagined. Is that a correct assessment, you think, Chase?
Yeah, and I would even, there's a lot of things. It's kind of funny, as much as, you know, I'll speak from my perspective on, you know, like when I'm filming and more so, let's say, producing a video, I really do want to give viewers a very realistic look of everything from, right. you know, holding a fish up. If it's a big fish, you know, I just want it to look like a big fish. I don't want it to look any bigger than it is, even though that's always not good. You know, but I would say that cameras can be, what I'm getting at is, I guess, cameras can be very deceiving.
Right.
And I'll just point this out that, you know, I lost the big fish. Actually, the episode's called The Biggest Muskie I've Ever Seen or something like uh-huh. that. And those cameras didn't do justice
no.
to the size of that muskie. And the perception is totally different when you're viewing it. And the same goes for casting. Absolutely. Like you said, I mean, what you're seeing on the computer screen is definitely different than what is going on a lot of times. And I would say, as you bring up fishing with somebody like Joe Bucher, a Hall of Fame angler, a legendary angler like Joe, I would say, can Joe bomb the Bucher tails and the toggers? Absolutely, obviously, no question. But more often than not, when you're watching somebody like Joe, it's not this big macho casting contest. Joe it's about this fine tuning, about placement. It's about you know, putting casts in specific spots. And so I would definitely say, Brian, it's probably deceiving. They look longer than they actually are in real life.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah, especially when you're seeing us cast it like, you know, rocks and things on the shoreline. You know, they're not very far cast. You know, sometimes you can almost sidearm them right on in there. I mean, you know.
The one I remember asking Joe about and that is Iron Jaw, you know, the spot.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so for everybody listening, Iron Jaw is just a name of a spot we know on a lake. And I actually asked him, I said, man, are we way closer than you were when you guys hooked? It was a fish Godorsi caught off that. I said, how close are we? I said, it feels like we're way in here. And he said, no, this is the same pass I always make. And that's when it really registered that just the viewing the camera in those angles completely changes everything. I would even say Joe gets crazy close. You know, at least in my experience.
Oh, yeah, he does. And I think that's because Joe is, and he's really good at this, is the lead angler. Joe is very disciplined. And I learned this was Cameraman 101 years ago, is, you know, when Joe's lead caster, he's throwing, you know, because of the way his cameras are set up, he's throwing so that lure lands in the, and I guess, you know, this is, I'm dating myself now to when, you know, the older cameras Joe had, but that lure had to land in a specific spot between, you know, 10 and 2, maybe 10 and 1 o'clock. And so he's very much dedicated throwing ahead of the boat. He's never throwing perpendicular. So, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, I mean, I guess back to the thing, I'd say if, Brian, if you're watching one of my videos, I'm thinking about my own spots. If you ever see it, me throw on a reef, like open water, I guess I would say, man, I am belted out there. I guess that's when I'd say, okay, man, that's about as far as I can throw it. If I'm throwing a blade over an open water reef, I am throwing that thing, man. I'm usually trying to attain my max distance. But, you know, if I'm fishing a shoreline and you're looking at, you know, more so position casting, that is not as far as it looks.
No, not at all. We had a funny thing at the house the other day. Me and my wife were just goofing around in the living room, right? And I picked up, I have a cat. Her name's Joni, and Joni might be like 4 pounds, right? And I held her out. I said, how big can you make this cat look? From Force perspective, we were talking about people taking pictures, right? So I'll text it to you. And we played with it. I was actually going to put a thing on, I'm going to do a thing on the app or just show it, like, because the perception of what you're seeing. So here's this cat that's like 3 pounds that I'm holding out. It looks like a freaking cheetah. You know, so it's just like, don't believe what you see, you know.
Let's just go off topic real quick. I mean, the funniest thing about that, and this is my gauge of, and generally speaking, is a fish truly big?
Mm-hmm.
You gotta take a look at the guy holding the fish for
if
one
it's
thing.
Against him.
I mean, it definitely can affect the size of the fish. I mean, you got guys like Tony Rizzo, you know, smaller guys holding massive fish and they look like whales.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if big fish, and you know this, Stephen, as a state record holder, big fish are tough to hold.
I don't care who you talk.
I mean, if a guy in the photo is wincing, then it's probably as big as he says it is. If he's holding up to the camera and it looks giant, I don't know.
Dude, I'll tell you flat, okay? And you're off to that topic, and like, I'm 6'2", 220 on a bad day. And what I measure it against is I hear about all like 40 pounders. And what I tell people is go to Walmart and grab a bag of dog food and hold it straight out. And that's exactly what holding a 40 pounder is. Every one of like the big monsters I've been fortunate enough to catch, if you look, I'm like sort of got them leaning back on my chest. It's sort of like,
yeah, you're kind of resting on my leg. Dude,
you're glide raider fish. That first monster in glide raider is one of the fattest muskies I've ever seen. And in that picture, you're not even holding it out because you're having it in your lap.
Dude, absolutely.
You couldn't hold that thing out, even with the adrenaline of being excited.
It gets old real quick. You're like, all right, I'm going to.
Yeah, there's no way. I've tried. I'm sitting, arms are shaking, and you're like, bah.
It hurts.
We could do a whole podcast on trick photography.
We could.
I've got a couple of pictures like 45s that people think that's a 53. No, it's because it's like a 45. I can hold it straight out and hide my hands, you know?
Yep. So, well, Stephen, one last thing, I guess. I'd say if I would have one last answer to this question, it would be, Brian, you know, pick and choose your spots where you're going to bomb a cast versus precision casting. I'd say, just for a quick example, you know, if I'm pitching into a line of grass, that's one. I'll just give a quick example there where I'm really limiting my casting distance, because if I go too far, you know, I don't care what it is, even if I'm throwing a safety pin slot master, it's going to get all marled up in the grass and it's going to be a wasted cast. So there's a lot of times when you're trying to be much more precise, and casting short is by far, in many cases, better than casting long. I mean, you can take the longest cast you want, but if you're getting fouled up because of it, you're not going to catch more fish by just long bombing.
Absolutely. You know? Well, let's keep boogieing here, because this is the problem with me and you. We just spent like 15 minutes on one thing. I love it, though.
You're really bad on this one. This is bad. Okay.
And I love that you guys love listening. We're getting into holds, all kinds of stuff. Next up is Sam B. He says, I mostly fish from a small boat. He said, I have one that I've rented. It's got a 9.9 on it and a portable sonar unit. He said, I mostly drift and sometimes I anchor. I know I'm lousy on my boat control. Is there any tips on how to set up a drift or approach in a proper way to hit a spot in a more efficient manner? So he's fishing out of a small boat with a 9.9. He does say in an anecdotal note that he has a 55-pound horse trolling motor, but he doesn't take it with him often. What do you think, man?
All right, so I am Sam B. I mean, I fish out of a Lumacraft 14-foot row, but I actually guided out of it this season when my engine was in the shop at one point, and absolutely, they could be just deadly muskie catching machines. Doesn't matter what you're fishing out of, especially if you're outfitted with electronics, you are in the zone. I would discipline yourself to bring that trolling motor. I use mine a lot, even for controlled drift. Mm-hmm. And I guess I would say this. An idea that comes to mind when I'm thinking about controlled drifts is you're going to drift a good spot more than once, especially if it's a good, a long, long spot. I mean, you might try to set yourself up for a couple different passes. You will never, never hit that drift the same way two times in a row, even if you're trying. So, you know, if you've got a spot and it's long, you know, let's just say you got a nice south breeze blowing and you're going to, you know, drift down the west shoreline of a lake or something like that. I mean, just set yourself up for as far as you can go and just ride it out. And when you're done, drive back and try to hit it from a different angle. If you're seeing fish in a certain depth range, like 10 foot on an edge, try to replicate that maybe. But the other thing that's interesting, I would say, is if you when you think that you're, like, drifting too shallow sometimes I try to, like, discipline myself to keep casting in those times, because you'll often find really big fish hiding in areas that you never would have suspected them to hide in, because your brain goes into the shutdown thing where you're like, no, okay, that doesn't look like traditional structure, so there can't be muskies hiding there, right? It's not traditional. It's like, you're so wrong. I tell that to myself all the time. Like, they're in there.
Absolutely.
So if you get sloppy with the drift, just so be it, accept it, but just do it multiple times. That's my take, you know.
Yeah, man, I've fished out of a John boat a billion times. I know one of my favorite lines Booker says all the time is he could catch them out of a bathtub, you know, so it doesn't matter what you're in. My trick too, if I'm trying to do like more controlled stuff, because I get what he's saying about like not having to lug a battery and a trolling motor and all that stuff, is
true.
Some tactical anchoring of like, if I'm fighting the wind or I'm against a weed bed, you know, anchor, same way we're doing on anchor mode with our fancy trolling motors, anchor it down, make your cast, fan cast it, and then let the drift take you. I've done that a bunch of times.
Absolutely.
And that would be my take, man. We'll go ahead and keep rocking through these. Next up
and
is...
And let me say one thing real quick. I was going to say, because I like the way we're hitting this on. And the third thing I would say is, if it really is bad and it's too windy, don't be afraid. And this is something I picked up with Joe, is just get out of the wind. Don't even mess with it. You know, if it's too much for your boat, fish efficiently. Don't sit there and try to fight it. So,
Absolutely. The next one up is from Jim. Jim says, what size rod should I use for bucktails and what size rod for jerk baits? Jim, I will tell you, Joe did a video. It's on his vlogs. It's here on the app, covering basically in the entirety of rod selection.
It was amazing.
It really is. It just covers it. What I'll say is this. I use the same rod for everything. So, you know, I differ on that because I'm going for efficiency and simplicity. What do you think, Chaz? Best bucktail rod, best jerkbait rod? What's your thought?
Bucktails, Steven. My favorite length is 9 foot, medium heavy power, fast action. Like, I mean, for almost all of my applications, until I'm starting to get up to like 10s and real big blades, if I'm fishing 5, 7, 8, I love the 9 foot length. It's just, you can sling them far, you can figure eight like nobody's business. You can, I mean, to me, that's my all around. I mean, if I had a rod that specialized for blades, that's it for the most part. I fish my Legend Elite 9 foot, medium heavy, like,
religiously.
Man,
cool. Let's keep rocking here. The next one up is from
jerkbait.
Oh, jerkbait. Yeah, jerkbait rod. What's your jerkbait?
No, I know.
Jerkbait,
I'm going to go anything between 7'6" to 7'10". Keep it lightweight, and I would say medium power, fast action. I mean, I think, you know, having a little, I say medium power instead of medium heavy. Because I think a lot of the little jerk baits and minnow baits, at least personally that I'm fishing, the 7-inch shallow raiders and stuff like that, you need a little bit of flexibility when you're slinging and loading that rod up. So there's my take on that.
Absolutely. Sorry to push you. I know you got places to be and things to do. So I'm just trying
through. Because this is good. We need some good cop, bad cop here. Keep us on track.
Bad cop is this flat, dude. I fish one rod, forget about it. I fish like a 9 foot rod. I can throw Magnum Bulldogs. I can throw 500 series Booker tails. I can throw AC Shiners. Maybe I'm the only guy on the planet that can do this. Maybe I'm in imbued with special powers.
I got to say one thing. Just a shout out.
Don't need them.
Shout out to Tyler Andrews. It's impossible to throw a 500 series Booker tail on a heavy power 8'6" rod. It's actually impossible. That doesn't work. Just so everybody knows.
Is that from the guru?
I gave him so much crap.
Man, I don't know. Here's my thing. I don't have the biggest, baddest boat. I've got like, you know, 17 foot big deep V, but it's not like, I don't have room for like 53 rods on there. Cause here's my problem, guy. Tell me how you rectify this. This is one thing I've always tried to figure out. As guides and quote unquote knowledgeable sources, I don't know if me and you are knowledgeable sources the way we do the podcast, but barring any other input. As knowledgeable sources, how do we rectify this? We tell people to have all these rods, right? Right? Yeah. That's always the conversation. Have your, as Joe puts it, have your golf club assortment. How many rods do you give clients when you take them out?
No, I got to argue with you, Don.
How many?
See, I do. So I've got, I can rattle off my list of rods. I mean, in my boat, my guiding boat, I got it. 8.6 medium heavy, 8.6 heavy. 8 foot medium heavy, 7.6 extra heavy, 7.10 medium heavy. I got at least minimally 5 rods in my boat.
Between three people. Or is that between two people or three people?
I really like having, I like having extra rods. If I've got two or three guys, and I'm not in a big boat either. I'm in the 17.5, 17 foot, Ranger. So,
but what I'm saying is this, and I get what you're saying. I'm totally not narking on you or anything like that. But getting at is, it just, I feel like as pros in the sport or whatever you want to call it, I feel like sometimes we spew off this stuff where it's like, you got to have like all these rods for that. Where I find that guys in actual practice, when they're not conveying it to the public, are using far less stuff than they say, you know. And I know you're not doing that. I'm not saying that
well,
and like,
agree,
but Joe,
yeah,
does,
yeah.
Joe uses everything he's saying, you know, and it's like he's got that assortment. I just don't have room, so that's why I'm just trying to be like practical, like, can I get away with one or two, you know?
True
You know, that's just whatever.
It's a good question. We could go back and forth because, yeah, I do agree. I mean, if you can't move in your boat, then you're going to have problems too. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, but I'm also the cheapest guy in the game. So it's just, Evan, and next up, here's a real question. So we're from rods to reels, which I use like one reel. So I'm the worst guy to ask. So I'll defer to you, man. Actually, I just realized I'm just like really pathetic. It's just like, no matter what, I'm using the same rod and reel.
But at the same time, let's say it like this. It just goes to show you, like Sam B with the 9.9 horse, and the tinier, the smaller boat. Or, you know, if you're Stephen Paul and you're going minimal on tackle or equipment, it doesn't matter.
Not tackle. That's
not tackle.
Problem.
Sorry. Not tackle. And also tinier is not a word.
My problem, I need more room for baits in the boat is why I don't
you know what? It doesn't, to a certain degree, it doesn't really matter what you're throwing with. You're going to catch fish if you're on good musky water and you're on good spots.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. So the next one is from Chris, and he said, what is the best use for a high-speed reel, and what gear ratio do you recommend for throwing top waters, and what do you consider, and he also says, what do you consider to be a high gear ratio reel? So what are you thinking?
Okay, the highest speed reel that I throw for what I do is 6.1 to 1.
Mm-hmm.
And No, it's not. That is my high-speed reel. I have some 7.3s or whatever they are, you know, 7.1 to 1s. And, you know, when I used to fish Suic a lot, I would, you know, throw the high speed reel at the Suic, or when I fished plastic a lot, I used to do it with those too, because I could suck up that slack line real quickly.
Yeah.
I know Joe loves to throw the high speed with the five. He loves throwing it with the 500s because he just doesn't turn the reel very fast and he can just burn the little 500 in with ease. So I guess that's a few ideas on my end, but my highest speed is a 6.1 to 1.
I mean, to be honest with you, you sort of nailed the thing like about Suix. You know, if you need quicker line pickup for the presentations you're doing, but I really think with reel speed too, I mean, you just need to have something that's comfortable. That's what I see more so than anything. It's just like, at a certain point you go, okay, is this comfortable? Do I feel good reeling these baits in? That's like, we get asked that a lot. Me and you have covered reels before. And the more I think about it, the more I just go, find something that works for you, because I can speed up or slow down any reel.
Well, that and the fact, I mean, when I'm fishing my 6.1 to 1, I mean, that spool is to the brim. I'm kind of actually pretty crazy on making sure that I've got a complete spool almost all the time. If I've lost a decent amount of line for whatever reason, I generally put new line on my reels and make sure that I'm outfitted to the specifications of that reel. So I guess, a lot of guys will fish their reel till it's half full, and I can't stand that personally.
Oh,
I don't like
you. You'd love my, I spool mine half full. So
really?
He would hate it. Yeah.
But that's the beauty of this podcast with us is, like, sometimes you and I are on completely different sides, which is very interesting. Because a 6.3 to 1 with a half spool isn't a 6.3 to 1. It's like a 5 or a 4.6.
Exactly.
You know?
I actually, the one thing, I'll say this, and I would be remiss not to explain more so. What I've done, and it's for clients, is because of these high speed reels and why I'm not like a big advocate on them, is if I put like a 6.3 to 1 in somebody's hands, regardless of presentation or bait, they're going to fish it too fast most of the time.
Okay.
I underspool.
Yeah.
But also, too, a little trick. One thing that I do is when I get into like cold water periods, I underspool intentionally on my reels, too, to slow my presentation. So
slow
I'm not,
everybody. Yeah.
Not getting wrist happy. But, you know, but I never fill mine up. I don't know. sometimes we're just like, but and I know you should. It's the same thing.
With that's very interesting. You know, I'm just kind of I like having a full darn spool.
Also, too, here's my problem. And this is just an aside. When those things are absolutely full, like, it's bird nest city. That's all I know. I at least still get. I think anybody would be a liar if you say you never get them. But I always find that, like, super hard to pick out when they're like right there on the top. But, you know, whatever.
True. I mean, boy, we could. All right, bro. I don't want to go down the rabbit hole. I'll stop
because I know where you're gonna go, and I'm gonna go. Well, I compensate by doing this, this, and this.
I know. And it's like, we don't want to go down there. I'm not doing it.
Listen, the cat can be skinned many ways, folks. That's why it's fun doing it with you, because it's just like I knew when I said that.
You knew what I was gonna say.
Because when you were like, I feel my reels all the way to the top, I sort of cringed, and I know you had the same reaction. Well, like, oh, mine are pretty much empty and look anemic. You know, what's wrong with this guy?
But,
and I'm sitting here going,
instantly, yeah. I was instantly respectful in my mind, though, when you said, hey, because I know you fish a ton. You know, your water is open like all winter, all season long, and so you're fishing cold water. I'm like, okay, well, I see more so on the client side. I totally get where you're coming from on. Hey man, you got to slow your clients' retrieve speed down. They just don't understand because they don't live it every day and every year. You got to go slow when it's cold.
Yeah, so, I fish that. That's something we'll get into in a later time because I fish pretty slow all the time anyway. But that's a whole other conversation. All right, the next one up is from Bob. Bob's asks, do you ever make use of inside out casting? An example of this would be with the boat positioned over structure, casting away from the structure and out towards deeper water and retrieving it back into the structure. And he says, if yes, under what circumstances? That's what I call a nature cast, to be honest with you, is what I'm getting out of that one.
Okay, I mean, I got to throw one in on this. I mean, one of my latest YouTube videos I put out was side imaging muskie. I think this would fall into that category. Just the beauty of it is,
absolutely,
I knew there was a muskie there because I saw it on my computer screen. And, I mean, there's a, what is it called, Bob, an inside-out cast. I mean, there's throwing, you know, out to a fish that's not even holding on structure. And I think there's a lot of muskies, as I'll just go quick on this, as I've really, you know, taken a dive in on the side imaging. I see so many fish that are on the opposite side of the boat of where I'm casting. And, like, when I'm casting a weed line, there are so many muskies, it blows my mind, that are just out behind the boat. Mm-hmm. And so side imaging's obviously changed the game. But before then, would you take casts out there? Of course. I mean, for me, I would. Those are exploratory casts. What did you call them, Steven?
We've always called it that on my boat because people are like, what are you doing? I'll just turn and launch it away from whatever we're fishing from, and we'll occasionally catch fish. It's called a nature cast. You're just throwing out into open nature. Who cares where it's going? And it's always been sort of like a joke. I would tell people, launch one over there. What are you talking about? Just fling it out into the abyss and see what happens, you know? I mean,
well, and how about, you know, if you've got, let's say, here's a scenario where I would do it. Let's say if you don't have side imaging, when would you throw a nature cast? I would throw a nature cast if you've got a muskie that follows up, disappears, you don't know where it went. I'm absolutely, obviously, throwing back and maybe doing some cast back stuff back in the direction you think it went. But you have no idea where that thing went. So I'm going to do Joe calls it the clock drill, I believe, where, you know, you throw the dummies to the dogs and you go all the way around the clock.
Right.
And, you know, you, you, I've caught muskies doing that, where you don't know where they are, and all of a sudden, boom, you hit them way out there in the middle of nowhere.
Man, sounds like you got a fire truck rolling up on you.
I was wondering if you were going to say anything.
Folks, Chaz is about to be arrested live on the podcast. Yeah, right. Send donations to muskiemastery.com.
Officer, you don't understand. See, I'm doing a podcast for Muskie 360 right now. Just let me go.
Right. All right. It's a Chicago cop. He's just going to crack your skull regardless, you know? We'll start a GoFundMe.
Yeah,
dude, the thing with that, like, there's another thing. God, there's just so many ways to go on these things. We call it 40-pound water, and it's something my dad talked about for years and had written about and all this fun stuff. Whereas, like, on these reefs in Canada, that once we're a cast off of that, that's what, like, where the boat would be sitting. If you're a cast away from that, that's where you need to be casting, because that's where you're going to encounter most of your 40-pound class fish. It's not completely true all the time, but the concept is strong, whereas a lot of these bigger fish are accustomed to using deeper water. And I think that's why I've gotten on that tip of, like, always not doing the clock drill. I know Joe's judicious about it. Mine is just haphazard spraying and praying. But
no, well, you know, and there's times when I call that, I mean, and this is when I've especially been pulling one out of my old guide secrets book here. I've had, you know, on our hard days when we're not pulling fish shallow and, you know, we're not pulling, you know, you've done all your tricks and you're not pulling fish off rocks or weeds or, you know, I call that suspended fishing, where I'll take the boat and instead of just turning around and casting opposite, what I like to do is I like to pull my boat off structure and have my cast, the end of my cast, land where the boat would traditionally be. So I'm actually fishing the spot probably in what you were calling 40-pound water, which I do very much believe you on. I agree with you on that. But that's another scenario where I've had a lot of success with that in cold fronts when, for whatever reason, these fish, you know, they pull off these spots and they're just kind of suspended, hanging a cast away.
Absolutely. We got to keep boogieing on this because I know you're short on time and we got to get through them here. There's one I'm going to go ahead and answer. It says, in a previous podcast, Chaz and Steven talked about spinnerbait mods. What are some other cool mods and will you do a video? Yes, I will do a video. I'll show you some stuff.
Master modifier, man.
Dude, I've got one. Yeah. I'm going to lay this on you live. I should have told you beforehand because I just caught a fish on it.
Yeah.
JB Rattler, right? With a number 5 Booker blade in front of it, like a dozer.
Whoa, really?
I cut up a 500. I just, the skirt was ratty and made a little dozer out of the 500 just to put it in front of that. And I went, this looks great. You know, so it's just what I do. A lot of stuff is just playing around with stuff, but that is something I am going to have in my game heavy this year. And to be honest with you, I was following up behind clients. And one was throwing an SR, a 5-inch SR. Another was throwing a JB Rattler. And I said, yeah, I'm going to play with this. And they had just put cast through there. So just that little tweak. And the reason I thought of that is this, and this is for your southern anglers. We all know that March Madness, coming March, April, is rattle trap time. We always talk about modifying your bucktails, doing all this stuff to make your bait stand out. That's the best I've got to tell you right now that I'm willing to divulge, because you know I've got the other rattle trap secret, and I'm going to I'll do something with that later. But if you want to make your rattle trap stand out, put that 500 series Booker tail blade in front of it. It's going to give off a different vibration. You're going to get a different sound out of that bait, and it's going to make you stand out from the pack. We're going to move on to the next one because I can't get on the mods here because it's going to last forever. It's from Carter. I'll trust me. I promise you, Tony, I'll have some stuff out on the app within a week or two. Carter asked, what is the difference? What differences are there in tail prop baits? What's the difference between like a Lake X, a Top Raider, a Lee Lure Water Chopper, and all the other baits on the market? Is there a difference, or do I only need one? That's a killer question.
I would say, you know, although I am a JBO guy, true and true, I would say that different top waters are just like having different blade designs and different, you know, they make different noises. And I think fish can and will become conditioned to different noises, and certain styles of lures will fish will sometimes eat them, and fish won't when they become conditioned to them. I think it's really a thing. And
absolutely.
I think that's why you have a wide variety of lures, is because, you know, fish have been caught before. 50-inch muskie, you know, could be 30 years old in a slow-growing system, and they've been caught plenty of times, certainly, yep, in their lifetime. And you know, the old saying, they don't make the same mistake twice, you know. So
no, not at all.
I think that having a variety of lures in there for a diverse presentation and lineup is important, even in something as simple as a topwater, because, you know, and there's just, for whatever reason, you know, there's certain bodies of water where you're like, I don't know what it is about that. Like, let's just, I'll just say the top raider, they just love that particular, yep, noise in here, and it won't hit anything else.
Yep.
It's like, whatever, you know?
I've got a body of water, I won't divulge which one, but they won't even look at a top raider. They won't.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, I'm JBO all day long as well, you know, and it's just like, it's not the only baits that I throw, but that's going to, you know, anything, yeah, Joe's mate is going to be my, you know, I'm loyal to that. And I go, they just won't do it. But if I smack on a Gucci's tallywhacker, they'll crush it.
And, you know, and I'll just say another one. I got a lake, yeah, and you know how crazy I am about a booger tail. I got a lake where they eat 500s like they're going out of style.
Yeah.
They will barely touch the 700.
Right.
I don't know why. Like, they just don't. But you go one lake over in the system, and they eat 700s. But on this particular lake, they don't eat them. I don't know why.
It's weird, you know, stuff. The one thing, at some point, we always get on these tips about we need to do this, need to do that. I promise I'll do it, because I've always thought about doing it, is taking, because I'm, you know, I'm an audio guy, for people not that don't know. I've worked in studios and stuff in Nashville for a long time. Is need to record these so you can actually, people can perceive the difference. Because if you really listen to the sound, and I'm talking like the sound of these different tail prop baits, they are definitively different.
Not even close to the same.
Right. And that's the thing, is if you go, and a lot of guys aren't taking the time to pay attention to that. I'm somewhat, you might call an audiophile, mix engineer, recording, all this stuff.
Yeah, you do it for a profession.
And it's like, if you delve into it, you go, these are crazy different. I mean, just the amount of bass response. If you look like a Lake X, what is it? The Fat Bastard, I think it is. Way bassier.
They're all different. I love this topic because I'm getting geeky now. Uh-huh. It's like, even in Tyler Andrews, another shout out to the old
Tyler Andrews.
I mean, Tyler got his name because he's so obsessive, absolutely, about top raiders, and they all sound, not all of them, but God, a lot of them sound so different, and, mm-hmm, some of them are just, you know, crazy, and, you know, he likes certain sounds, and I like my own sounds. It's like, yep. Now we're splitting hairs, but they all sound different.
They all sound,
especially different makes and models.
The one thing, a little inside scoop on top raiders, you know this, but we'll share it with the listeners, is that blade's not bendable. They're all pretty consistent. You know what I'm saying?
There you go. But top raider doesn't really bend much.
No, yeah. And that's one thing. So you're going to have a consistency there, and I think what you're saying, more than anything, you will get some coming off the line that are just a little bit different because of clear coat. Like, my best top raider has this big goober of clear coat on it, right? And it's like, mm-hmm, heavier sounding, and it's another little mod trick. If you want to switch up a top raider or a tail prop bait, this is heresy, you can, oh God, I can't even say it, super glue a quarter to the blade.
Whoa!
Okay,
that's an SP seeker right there.
Yeah, I'm awaiting the nasty text from Joe. Like, what are you talking? Why are you doing that crap? You know. But if you want to augment the sound of your tail prop bait to get different responses, if you start playing with the mass and the speed of the blade, it will change it. And so that's like why I was bringing up, like, the top raiders, you're always going to have that same angle. The difference on, like, the Gooches and some of these other baits, you can bend those lips and they come out of tune. And so, like, with the top raider, it's always in tune, but you can change it by putting a little something extra on the blade, doing a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
And let me say this, Stephen, one last little thing I got, and this is not a joke, but kind of a joke, uh-huh, is that, you know, my best, you just said yours, and I was like, well, I got to say my best top raider. My best top raiders have consistently, I don't know why, but literally consistently been, we call them the reject top raiders.
Absolutely.
And folks out there listening, you've probably seen this on Joe's show a million times, but folks, and this is your right as a consumer to do this. So I had a little bit of a odd conversation once with a guy who kind of got on me for making fun of these reject top raiders. And I, you know what? And I said, look, this is in every bit of your, you know, you're right as a consumer. If it has a chip in the paint, send it back in, right, and JBO will send you a new one. But I'm telling you, those ones that seem to have chips in that back tail after a cat, and sometimes it just happens with the clear coat, whatever, those are the best top raters. And you know what? Please keep sending them in. Please.
Oh, my God.
And I will take every one of them.
I want that. I want Joe's so bad. The, you know, the the one with the paint beat off, that it's like the only bait you can't throw on the boat.
Carl,
it's, oh my God, that bait.
Yeah, Carl, nobody can throw Carl. Carl's the best one.
Carl's the best, and it's just like, so yes, there are differences.
So
we're getting far afield here. Lusting over the top raider named Carl, everyone. All right, the next one up is Kevin. Kevin says, what's the easiest way to repair bulldogs and tubes? Super glue. Or a lighter. What do you think? I know you don't fish a lot of big rubber, but you got any tricks on that?
Now this is going to be old school, Steven, because I used to, now this is because when I was fishing the rubber pretty hard, they were kind of starting to come out with all that stuff, bonded and all that stuff. And I think they've got some new products that are really good. Honestly, what I used to do, this sounds crazy, but I used to take my bulldogs that were too beat up and I'd slice them. I'd take a real nice scissors, speaking of our mothers, I'd like literally sneak into her like makeup cabinet, take a nice pair of scissors out that are really good, and I would cut I'd have like a whole grafting setup in my garage where I would have little patches, and I would mix and match colors and stuff. And what I would do is I'd take staples, like staples that folks would use. I don't know if they use them for roofing. And I would kind of pinch the plastic, put a staple in, and melt a piece of plastic over the staple.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was, and it was kind of therapeutic after a day of fishing. I got so crazy. I had a whole plastic Plano tray full of grafting. It was a grafting tray where I'd have staples and plastic, and I'd have a little butane lighter, and I would just build these on the boat,
man,
and fix them.
Dude, I got in so much trouble from my wife like 2 years ago, and you're cracking me up about going in the kitchen. So I have a plaster of Paris mold I made of a bulldog. Right. So I'll tell everybody how to do it. You can cover a bulldog with Vaseline, cut its tail off, make a mold. If you want to know how to do it, email me. I'll show you. So you can repour them. So if it gets real ratted up, you got a couple, you can melt them down. My wife comes home. I'm standing in the kitchen on the gas stove cooking a bulldog and melting a bulldog down in the kitchen. I thought she was at the gym. I forgot, dude, I just had deer in the headlight. She's like, what in the F are you doing? You know, the house smells like melting plastic.
There's
literally half a bulldog melting. And the funny thing, she let me know, the pot I'm melting in is worth far more than the bulldog. You know what I'm saying? I was in so much trouble, man. If you're married out there, you'll know what I'm talking about.
Don't do that.
Ask for later. She came back laughing about it, and she came back and bought me a pot from the Dollar Tree. So if you're gonna melt down a bad bulldog, go get you a crappy pot from the Dollar Tree. And like I said, if you want info, I can tell you how to do that on how to re-pour those. Okay, so next up, pretty cool, another cool question as far as gear. Lynn wants to know, what's the difference between Cortland Master Braid Suffix 832 and Beast Braid? So I'll delve in. Cortland Master Braid, I have fished all three of these. Cortland seems to hold water to me.
I was just going to say it's soft.
Soft. I got no problem with Suffix. I'm a Beast Braid guy, and if given my druthers, I'm always going to pick Beast Braid. But if you're trying to choose between the three, I'm definitely going to eliminate Cortland because, like I said, it's holding water the times I've fished it. Maybe they've changed it, but that's been the thing with me. The 832, what I notice with that, it starts getting faded, which I don't think the fish care about. But I don't have that problem with Beast Braid at all because it's just like, it'll lose some color. But that's the toughest line I've ever fished, man.
A lot of folks, again, the Beast Braid holds its color pretty well. I'm not as caring on it loses its dye a touch after that first day of fishing with it.
You're telling me when it's completely full to the top of your reel, you don't want to see all the amazing color when your reel's completely full?
No. But hey, but I got to, you know, I got to say, and I'm not bragging on this, but I'm just saying I'm proud of it. Is that when Joe and the JBO crew was developing bee sprayed, I got a chance to test all these different types of bee sprayed before they came out with the one that we have now. And the one that is in production now was my favorite. I fished it as a prototype, and the reason I like the current bee sprayed compared to the different varieties I was able to test is because it's tough. Yep. And by that I mean that when I run my fingers over that line, it's coarse, and I like a line, you know, and again, I'm sure Cortland makes a great product. I caught my first muskie on Cortland, way back in the 90s, and I like the coarser lines. Like bee sprayed, they're thin and they just feel tough.
Because you're searching for verbiage as well, and I was sitting here doing the same thing, thinking about what I was going to say, because like there's not a lot of great verbiage to describe the lines, but I'm with you on the toughness, you know what I'm saying, because it has that burlappy coarse, I don't know a great word to describe it, but the thing that stands out to me is it doesn't get hairy. I don't know another great word for that.
Well, okay, I got to say, man, soft lines, and again, I'm sorry to anybody who fishes likes the softer line. I noticed this a long time ago. Soft lines, boy, do they cut. I'm sure they have the strength that they promote, but boy, do they cut easy. They cut real easy with a knife, and the coarser lines do not cut as easy.
You know, and I'm not going to, like I said, we're not here to bash different products or anything like that. We're definitely, I'll tell you flatly, as far as it comes to line, Chaz and I are both, you know, taken care of on bee spray, period. So we're definitely heavily both skewed there, and we're always going to be open and honest about things like that. But what I would say is this, is I avoid those soft lines, and I avoid anything that retains water. And the other thing is this, is like some of the mass production lines, and I'm not going to name the name, it's a brand that we all know, but it's not, we haven't mentioned it, where I wouldn't fish it. I don't care if they gave me, you know, 500 free spools a year, because it's like in the past I've had so many break offs. So, you know,
I don't know if mine's the same as yours, but I have a line, and I could tell you the year. I mean, it was the saddest, like I had customers, and it wasn't that it was just cause they would, it just wasn't taking the abuse of customers casting over, not that I'll put myself in there of anybody, including myself, casting over a dock, missing a cast or hitting a tree. And it would, the moment it would kind of do that, it was compromised, and you weren't, it was bad.
The other thing is, that's, to be honest with you, I'll tell you flat out. The only two brands of line I would fish, one would be Suffix and one would be Bee Spread. Just because, I mean, I've got an extra spool of Suffix hanging back here in the shop that I just have still had. I would fish that with no hesitation. One thing I'll tell you, and I had a client show up, and I will name this line. It's this inexpensive brand called Vicious, right? And the guy was like, man, this braid. And he was, and I felt bad. I felt so bad for the dude. He's like bragging. He's like, it's $12.99 a spool on Amazon. It's as good as anything else. And I was sitting here going, oh gosh. And of course, you know, do you want to tell the rest of the story that you've never heard? You know exactly what I'm about to say. You know?
All right, let's hear it.
He hooks into a fish and it breaks. And it breaks like 30 feet away from the fish.
Oh,
it's like
God.
In the middle. I mean, I watched the line sort of recoil in both ways. Like, you know, when line breaks, it sort of like flutters, you know, when the tension's off of it. And we watched it like mid in the arch of his, he's putting pressure on the fish, and it's like 30 feet away from the fish and 30 feet away from his line, the tip. So beware budget brands. That's one thing I would say.
Yeah. You just pay for what you get, man.
Yeah. And man, the thing is like, once again, promoting Bee Sprayed here. I've not had any break offs with it. You know, obviously you can have operator error issues with things if you're banging them through rocks and stuff like that today. But I've not had any line slippage because of the coarseness of the line. So if I have a knot, my knot never moves and I don't have any break off. So I'll shut up, and that's why I'm a Bee Sprayed guy. You know.
I know. I caught my biggest fish on it. I mean, so from that, that's my selling point is I've caught my best fish of my life on it. I have no reason to be changing anything.
Absolutely. Yeah, ask my clients about cleating it. We've done that, like pull baits out. Like if you get a bulldog stuck in a tree, I'll wrap it around the cleat of the boat in the bee spray, and either the bulldog, the hook bends before it breaks the line. So.
Oh yeah.
Anyway, moving on from our extended Beast Braid commercial, available at all fine retailers like Mill Sweet Farming. So, all right. Tom W. wants to know, can you give me some tips on solo net jobs? Woo.
Oh, yeah.
That's a great question.
That is a really good question. Holy cow. Who wants to go first? You or me, Steve?
You go for it, because I just rambled about Beast Braid for like 80 minutes. Go ahead.
All right. I'll just say easy tips here would be, I'd say the first thing that I think about when I'm netting a fish is I try to, if I can, and sometimes it's hard to do in the heat of the moment, but what I try to do is look at where that fish is hooked as I get close to the boat, as the fish gets closer to the boat. Mm-hmm. If I can kind of get a quick glance, that gives me a confidence to, I don't know, go one way or another on it, but I guess you say that's just first thing I'm doing solo is I'm looking for, and I should even back up real quick, Stephen.
Uh-huh.
Solo net jobs, holy cow, guys and gals out there, please, 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 and if you've watched my YouTube videos, you know this. My net is in the same, it is in a certain spot, mm-hmm, that I know for that particular side of the boat that I'm fishing on, I can get to it easily. There's nothing in the way. It's not snagging on lures. It's not snagging on rods. The net has got to be ready because you're, yes, by yourself. And you cannot afford to be screwing around, pulling it out from wherever. That's step number one. And two, I would say on my end, something that I've really, really think about a lot is I try to take my time when I'm by myself.
Yeah.
I think that you're more apt to lose fish solo by horsing them,
yes,
than you are to take your time, free spool them, get them ready. Because again, I think that you're not going to catch as many fish, unfortunately. And we've all been in this boat solo fishing.
Yep.
There's muskies that I've lost solo fishing that if you had been there, Stephen, that fish would have been caught and no problem at all. But again, I just take my time. I free spool them more and I play them out and,
absolutely,
try to get them ready.
But dude, you're saying that like my biggest fish ever, last year, like my personal best. What happened, I'll tell that story because it's like, so just being prepared because my clients wanted to go to lunch. I think I told you know the story where they went to lunch and then I went out and said, well, I'm not going in to eat. Meet you guys back at the dock when you're back. You know, I caught that fish and I was by myself.
Yeah.
And my net was in the back of the boat, not ready.
No.
I nearly lost my PB, like the biggest muskie I've held. Because my net is not ready because I was guiding, you know what I'm saying? So like I hadn't even made that switch to, hey, I'm solo in the boat. I need to be prepared for that. That is, excuse me. I'm, I'm dying here live on the air, folks. Hold on. Let me take a drink.
Well, you're making me think of something, but I won't interrupt your story. You're making me think of something.
What I was getting to this is immediately, like you said, having that net ready and then having a plan. Because what I'm getting at with that story is, once I salvaged the net and it was open and ready to go and good to go, is I already knew what I was going to do the next step. So I think the biggest thing in this is having a plan. So we know where the net is. You know where the handle is, where you can blindly grab that thing with one hand. You know, you don't want to take your eyes off the fish.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is when I'm solo, I'm trying to land that fish laterally. I don't want to land that fish coming at me. I don't want the net pushed out in front of me because when you've got it in your, usually the rod's going to be in your, or the net will be in your weak hand, right? Most, if you think about it, the way most people are going to do it, I fish left-handed, so the rod is in my right hand. And, you know, just depending on which way you're doing it, but that would be, you know, in my weaker hand in general. So the net's in my left
now,
hand.
Now, see, I'm opposite on you on this one, I think. Like, yeah, because I got my rod in my left hand and I'm right-handed, so I got the net in my right.
Yeah, you got your dominant hand. Okay, so either way, maybe I'll step back on that, but it's something to consider at least because I don't go because of the arm strength. You know what I'm saying? I'm an actual lefty, but I do more, whatever, I won't even go there, but But I that's a no other story of school desks. School desks, they're only right-handed, and you're in West Virginia, and they go, listen, hey, weirdo, you're going to learn how to write right-handed or you can't come to school. But anyway, having that arm out there, I don't want the fish out in front of me that way. I try to get he's coming alongside the boat, so he's got one or two options. He can go out and away from the boat, or he can run into the boat, which he's not going to do, or he's going to come straight forward and land in the net. So I'm trying to pin him against the boat. Yes, he can run under it. We all know that. But that's at least what I'm trying to do, is get him coming long ways against the boat. So I've got the net supported against the boat, and then I'm just dragging him in that way. What's sort of your tactic?
I got two more things I would add to this. This is an awesome conversation. One is that if you've got a big heavy net, but you're out solo, one thing that I don't do it as much anymore. I don't know if I don't think I'm that much stronger than I used to be. But when I was a little younger, I used to not have my net handle fully extended. I would actually have it maybe like 3/4. Mm-hmm. And that obviously it just seems like it takes a lot of the weight off the big net bag, because you've got, you know, not getting into physics, you guys know I'm a science teacher, but it makes your net lighter for you when you're going to lift it solo, if it is actually closed, if you're making your handle a little bit shorter. You don't want to shorten it all the way. Obviously, that's not going to give you enough distance for netting fish that are a little further away, but that's one thing. But I'd say the other big thing for me is when I go to grab that net, and you wouldn't know this necessarily by watching a video unless you're really listening for it. Anytime I'm grabbing the net, and it is out of instinct now, is my button is pushed on the reel, and I am in free spool mode. I'm only on tension of the thumb. Anytime I'm grabbing that net, because when I'm going down and I'm looking at that net generally, or I'm focused on getting the net, if that muskie in that split second, and this happens pretty frequently, if they make a run and you don't have that button pushed, all of a sudden your arm is getting swung out over the side of the boat. There's a lot of tension. The muskie's not going to be able to pull drag out, and it's just not a good situation. So solo for me, if a muskie goes for a big run, I've got that button pushed so that if it happens, okay, she can take a little bit more line again, and I'll bring her back in, and I'll net her. But I never like being in a situation where when I'm going to get the net and, you know, I don't know, net bag's big, and hey, maybe I got to unhang it on something or whatever it is, or, you know, you're just getting set up. If it takes a run, I want to be able to have that give. Mm-hmm. So that's one of my biggest tips.
Absolutely, man. And you know, everybody's going to have their own way of doing it. But like you said, you're smart and you got a plan, man. So we've got two more questions. One of them I'm just going to answer because it's another short one. I know you'll jump right on board on this. Randy says, will there be any Muskie 360 events or seminars next winter or show season? Yes, absolutely.
Yes, absolutely.
We're already talking about it. Me and the Book Daddy talked about it. We're going to work on next winter on having something together, whether it be a clinic or like a day event. You can actually come and waste a day listening to me and Chaz ramble in person.
I can't wait, man. It's
going to
be awesome.
Yeah, you know, sorry, dude's calling me. Man, the fun of doing live podcast here. But yes, we're going to put something together so you guys can come out and we can just talk about this stuff. Obviously, we love talking. So me and Chaz will just sit in chairs and talk for 17
hours
straight.
And we can do a Q&A
camp. That'd be awesome, like a live Q&A. And you can watch us sit here and act like goobers. But okay, so the next one, the last question we're going to do is from Jeff. Jeff says, how long will fluorocarbon leaders last? Do they wear out quickly or slowly? Do they wear more at the loops or where the hardware is attached? And do you know if you've lost any fish because of breaking a fluorocarbon leader? Yes.
Wow. So my answer will be short, Stephen, because I'll just say this, guys. I left, and I know they're good, and they have a purpose, and they have a reason for a variety of reasons why you fish fluoro. I don't anymore because I got scared. Mm-hmm. I would get icks in the fluoro, and I'd be replacing them, and then you kind of get into this battle where you're like, when do I do it? When do I not? And I just left it. Some of that's because when I hooked up with Joe, he was just hardcore piano wire steel and no baloney. I, you know, don't mean to say baloney, but it was just, I call it the no BS system, where steel and split rings, they ain't going to break. Not very often. I don't throw fluorocarbon for that reason, because you don't know. It's not just the cutting, or but, you know, the UV, the ultraviolet light, it penetrates that fluoro, and it degrades it over time, too. Yep. So
a little pro tip here. For, like, if I need to have a floppy leader for twitch baits, which personally, like, on my rod, it's always a straight steel leader. I don't fish any other things. It's it. I fish with a tuna ring on one end, so there's no swivel, and like a 220-pound snap, and I'm done with it, you know, because I've lost fish when fluoro first started getting big. I was like, oh, I got to try this, because fluoro doesn't give you any advantage on bucktails, you know, or anything that I'm aware of. We're not talking trolling here. We're just talking straight casting, but no real advantage. And I just don't want that possibility of an issue with it. I don't want to have to inspect my leader religiously.
Oh, dude.
But I'll tell you this. If you're worried about having that flexibility for like twitch baits and stuff, go with multi-strand wire. I mean, it's
for me,
Joe fishes that stuff you can actually knot, whatever that
strand, that tiger wire, I guess they can call it, I think. It's fantastic.
Yeah, well, that's just a whole different deal there, and you can crimp up some multi-strand wire leaders. I'll be honest with you, when I troll, like if I'm dedicated trolling setups, I troll 130-pound hard mono. That's it. You can buy it from, it's for fishing like billfish. And I go, if it's good enough for billfish and barracudas and stuff, it's good enough for muskies, and they can't cut it. Because with that, you can get like 100 yards of the stuff for like $10. I can throw those out every day. I can take the hardware off those, throw them away. I catch a fish on it, I'm throwing away. I think what's happening, and like I said, there's every company sells fluorocarbon leaders, so I'm not picking on anything or brand. We're not talking brands or who makes them, who this, whatever. I'm just talking about the industry in general. Fluorocarbon leaders are great for the industry because they're a disposable product for manufacturers.
Yeah.
And so... You see these heavily throughout the industry. Use these. It keeps you coming back to the trough. And there's some purposes for it. But that's the thing, is like, if you're people start, what happens, instead of buying a bunch of these, people are trying to get the most they can of a singular $10 leader, and it's going to lead to failure.
Yep. It's,
you know,
I mean, I even, like, just like you're saying, man, Steven, I am selective even with my steel leaders.
Yes.
I mean, I rotate them. I do not use them for, you know, I'll give them a season or less a lot of times, you know.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's the thing is, you know, I mean, Joe sells fluorocarbon leaders, but, you know, it's one of those things of like those are fantastic leaders. And I'm not knocking it, but if you're going to fish them and you're going to fish them a lot, you're going to need a bunch of them. So if you're price conscientious, for me, and same thing, I'm sure with you guiding, it's just like, you can't strap on a $10-$15 leader every day. You know, it starts cutting in cost. So, you know, if you're looking for either disposable, that's why I like the hard mono, because it's just cheap and disposable, or the straight wire, because like you said, I can go out with straight wire and catch 4 or 5 fish and not even think about it, as long as it's not real kinked up.
Absolutely.
You know, it just gives you that option. So
I like the no BS system. I'm not worrying as much with it. So
that's where I'm at, man. So, well, Chaz, thank you for finishing up some of these questions. Chaz's going to be back really soon, because we've got a ton more questions, which we love answering here on the podcast.
Chaz, it is awesome. We have an absolute blast, Steven. I mean, I think all you guys and gals can tell out there, and we look forward to this stuff. And I mean, it is so much fun for us. So I really enjoy it. And, you know,
absolutely. Well, we're going to go. Chaz is going to go fill his reels to the top, and I'm going to empty mine out. We'll talk to you guys here soon. Thanks.
The Muskie 360 Podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild, Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Bucher Outdoors, the number one name in big fish products, and The Muskie Shop.